This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients every day here at the Hoffman Center. If you require a nutrition consult with me, but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.
Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and it is time for part two of our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions. A reminder, Layla Mudin is our Hoffman Center nutritionist. She has a registered dietitian's credential as well as a master's degree in the field of nutrition. We work together on a daily basis to solve patients' problems. No one gets past her because every medical problem has a nutritional concomitant. So part of every visit at the Hoffman Center involves a nutritional consultation, regardless of whether the patients want it or not. No, when patients come to the Hoffman Center, they sign on to the premise that there will be an attempt to address their diet.
Absolutely. And you know, and apropos to this, I have a Chinese proverb hanging on my wall that says, the patient who does not pay attention to diet is wasting the physician's time.
Thank you. So let's, you know, and so don't waste my time and come to see me and just want to take a bunch of oral pills. It's interesting. I actually saw a patient the other day. Very interesting. A guy's, he is a fantastic exerciser. He's 82 years old almost, and the guy looks great. And he has an enormous number of supplements because he listens to my show, listens to other shows, he reads newsletters, he has an enormous number of supplements, he's very compliant. And he continues to exercise. He plays tennis three or four times a week. 82.
It's terrific.
God bless him. However, he has prostate cancer. So, like, you know, I'm thinking, what is going on here? Why, you know, look, by the way, you can do everything impeccably and still get cancer. So, life is not a merit system. Health is not a merit system. But when it comes to diet, I think he is, he was susceptible to something that we call moral licensure. Which is, when you are doing such a good job in one area, such as exercise, you know, you figure, hey, you know, I'm going to, I have some salami, some pepperoni pizza, some cold cuts. He doesn't take much time with the food because, you know, he's so good and he gets the nutrients he thinks from all the wonderful supplements he's taking. However, one could argue that the consumption of lots of cheese and lots of processed meat is not great for the prostate. So,
sodium nitrite, all the IGF and dairy, and so forth.
So this actually, it took me about 50, 20 minutes into the consultation. You would have discovered it within, you know, 30 seconds of your intake with him. But, you know, it's sort of like, I'm scratching my head like, you know, gee, I guess this guy's got, you know, like hit by a lightning bolt. It's like bad luck. But no, there may have been causation there.
So we had a, we had a long discussion about his diet and why and so forth. And I actually like to use Dr. Perlmutter's example. I heard him say it at a recent medical conference. When you bring your dog to the vet because your dog is sick, the first question the vet asks is, what are you feeding him? Why is that never a question in the doctor's office? So there we started, and I think he got it, you know.
Some of my best friends are vets. I love the way that vets think. Because they really think holistically about the animals, and they really have a lot of nutritional products and herbal products. And, you know, when a dog has the mange, they give him like essential fatty acids and, you know, they don't just give him steroid cream, you know. They, they treat it internally, you know.
Anyway, let's see. Ellen writes, hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. My husband experienced sudden hearing loss in one ear a week ago. An ENT doctor has diagnosed this as an autoimmune response and prescribed 4 weeks of prednisone therapy. There was no apparent cause, and my husband is otherwise healthy. He's 63. I've been listening to you for years and consider you and I responsible for his excellent diet and supplementation. Is there anything he could do to prevent additional hearing loss?
Okay, so here there's hearing loss, which is called presbycusis. Mm-hmm. We have, like Presbyterian, which is, I guess presby is Greek for old.
Oh.
So presbycusis means old age hearing is elderly people gradually have a hearing loss. Mm-hmm. You know, it does happen. But this is sudden onset hearing loss. It's a different situation. So typically the doctor did what is the standard therapy, which is in case it's inflammatory or autoimmune, you hit the person with steroids for a while.
Right.
And then, you know, good luck. It might come back and it might not come back.
Mm-hmm.
There are actually some good studies looking at glutathione intravenously for sudden onset hearing loss.
Wow.
Also alpha lipoic acid for hearing loss. Possibly N-acetylcysteine, which is a building block for glutathione.
Ubiquinol.
Ubiquinol, I'm not sure, it's been documented for hearing loss. It makes sense. I'm just not sure it's documented. But the one that is documented for noise-induced hearing loss, and they've done studies with it, and this is of interest to the military because they have a lot of noise-induced hearing loss, is nicotinamide riboside, which is the Niacel product that I've been talking about. I don't think I've seen such a response to anything I've talked about or written about in the last 10 years, probably since Ubiquinol.
Wow.
When I got on board with Ubiquinol, it was a big thing. Early on, I was an early adopter, and I was impressed with it, and then people really flocked to Ubiquinol, and I think in some ways I created a wave for Ubiquinol popularity. I contributed to it. I won't say I created it. But nicotinamide riboside is an active form of vitamin B3.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just take niacin or niacinamide. It is a precursor to NAD, which is
the Krebs
energy
cycle.
Compound that is especially important in nerve transmission and is really being explored in a lot of neurodegenerative disorders. It's also, there's a trial underway now at Cornell looking at traumatic brain injury.
Wow.
Using, you know, Cornell doesn't get any better than that here in New York City, where, you know, folks, it's almost like they get hit and then their brain goes out and they have problems with, you know, focus, balance, memory, they lose IQ points.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like the football players, you know, like, I don't know if you saw the movie, with Will Smith about, traumatic encephalopathy in football players. But, you know, this would be something that, the NFL could use. But anyway, coming back to hearing loss, those are the things I would try. And I would probably go high on nicotinamide riboside. I'd probably take about 500, even maybe up to 1,000 a day for a short period of time to see if we can recover some of the lost neurons.
Wow.
Because those are nerve cells in the ear.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Ellen, best of luck to your husband. Thank you for your email. Let's see here. Got an email from, I don't have a name here. Is there supplements or any other solution for bamboo spine disc problems coupled with arthritis?
Well,
how can I maintain an active lifestyle?
Bamboo spine is a finding on X-ray. You know what bamboo looks like, right? It looks like, you know, like a
takes
solid
over.
Column.
it's sustainable.
It takes over in your garden, but let's let's hone in on one stalk of bamboo, you know, like a bamboo pole, and it looks like there's no spaces in between. It's all fused, and that's what the spine begins to look like in certain diseases.
Ankylosing?
Ankylosing spondylitis may cause that appearance. It's a characteristic, the radiologists describe it as a bamboo spine. And I'm not sure if this is what this person has. Maybe that's a simple way for the doctor to describe what she had without using a medical term. But it's an inflammatory disorder. If this is a female, it's far less common in women.
This is a female.
Okay. So I'm not sure if that's the case.
Yeah.
But it's what's interesting about that condition is that that condition is very much related to the gut. There's a relationship between the presence of a bacteria in the gut called Klebsiella and a genetic marker called HLA-B27. And if you test and a person doesn't have HLA-B27, they don't have ankylosing spondylitis. It's almost distinctly genetic, but if you have HLA-B27, you're not necessarily going to get it. If you have this bacteria proliferating in your gut, it is much more likely that you will get this inflammatory condition of your spine. This is another example of leaky gut syndrome, or dysbiosis.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, this leads us to think that diet has an impact, that, how do you change your gut? You change your diet, you go on a paleo diet.
Yes, because it's autoimmune.
You take anti-inflammatory nutrients, curcumin and boswellin and fish oil, higher doses of vitamin D that has an anti-autoimmune effect.
Magicare, possibly.
Magicare, one might consider a prescription of low-dose naltrexone for that, since it's an autoimmune disorder and LDN helps autoimmune disorders.
Mm-hmm.
Those are some of the considerations.
Right. Does a person have to be concerned about movement or exercise or further injury?
Yeah, there's probably a physical therapy component to that, but once the spine is seemingly fused, so it probably limits range of motion. You know.
Right.
And then it compresses the nerves and you could have pain radiating down or weakness.
Mm-hmm.
Spinal stenosis, with difficulty walking, that kind of thing.
All right. Thank you, Anonymous, for your email. We hope you feel better soon. All right.
Anonymous. Right.
Yeah. What does Dr. Hoffman think about the medicine Forteo for osteoporosis? We get a lot of osteoporosis questions.
Forteo is a powerful medication that can help to reduce osteoporosis. Taken by injection, you can only take it for 2 years because it is associated with a higher risk of certain types of bone cancer. So,
For crying out loud.
Yeah, that's why its use is limited. But in people who take it for the requisite period of time, it doesn't appear to increase the risk of bone cancer. I think it's a backup plan when the natural therapies don't work. I've actually, I think I can count on one hand the number of patients in the last few years who have said, "I'm sorry, the nutrition is not enough for you. You need to take Forteo."
That's with severe osteoporosis.
Yeah. I actually prefer it to the bisphosphonates, which are Actonel, Beneva, and
Fosamax,
and also the intravenous form, which is reclast. So I think that you can, I think that you can get, you get good results with that.
Right. Okay. Thank you very much for your question. We've got an email from Marianne. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. We use Superbeats, Neo40, and Zona in our home. I heard Dr. Gallen say that nitric oxide.
I have a new business, a used car business, because I have a really nice. I have a 1968 Pontiac that runs like a dream. It was like, no, I'm sorry.
I heard Dr. Gallen say that nitric oxide harms the gut microbiome. What are your thoughts?
Well, this is an example of the duality of certain nutrients. Here's a thought, is that Viagra helps to produce nitric oxide. That's how it produces erections. I would hazard to say that somebody who takes Viagra day in and day out relentlessly at high doses might have a pro-oxidant or free radical-inducing effect, because nitric oxide can rev free radical production. Okay? So Dr. Gallen is correct, is that nitric oxide is vasodilatory, has a lot of good effects, but in high amounts, especially, if you had ulcerative colitis or some condition where there's a lot of inflammation, you may not want to add a lot of nitric oxide. But it's not outside nitric oxide that's the problem. Nitric oxide is being generated by the inflammation.
Fascinating.
So it's not, in that case, it's the body's own production of nitric oxide in response to inflammation. And I'm thinking that, there are no studies that suggest that people who drink a lot of beet juice, for example, are going to get inflammation or get too much of a problem. It's a natural source, outside source, and, I don't think it's a problem. But it's a mechanism of a pro-inflammatory mechanism.
Right, that's fascinating. So we could still eat a celery stalk here and there and not worry about the nitric oxide.
So. Or take you know, the beet extracts.
Right, right. Marianne, thank you for your question. Okay. We've got an email from Gabby. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, I was listening to Dr. Hoffman's interview with Dr. Frank Lipman. Dr. Lipman's take on soy piqued my interest. He mentioned that the preferable use of soy should be in a fermented form. I've been making yogurt from organic soy milk and culturing it for 24 hours. Would that fit into the preferable category?
Yes.
That sounds yum.
That's fermentable, yeah. Well, you see, I think there's some beneficial compounds that are produced and there's some harmful compounds that are broken down by the fermentation process. And, you know, the reason that he's saying that is he's taking sort of a middle view. There are people who think that that soy is like the crust of the vampire. You know, it's like horrible, you know, it's the worst thing that ever happened. And I think some people are very sensitive to soy, and I think that we consume too much GMO soy in this country.
Yeah, most of it is GMO.
And also, some
point.
Of this is sort of this crappy food like texturized vegetable protein, you know, things that are sort of like meat filler products.
Right.
That are probably not that great. But when you ferment the soy traditionally, as in tempeh or tofu, it probably has less harmful effects and potentially beneficial effects.
Mm-hmm.
I think the soy controversy is a really hot controversy because on the one hand, one's concerned about the pro-estrogenic effects of it.
Right.
On the other hand, somebody's, you know, people are concerned about the allergenic effects or
the goitrogenic effects.
The goitrogenic effects.
But when you ferment it,
it makes it more accessible.
Yes. It reduces its
and also it,
goitrogenicity, if that's a word.
Soy, per se, that's not broken down, it resists digestion.
Yeah.
It has tryptase inhibitors.
Uh-huh.
Or trypsin inhibitors.
Okay.
Which inhibit the digestion of protein.
Yeah.
And so, for some people, it's kind of indigestible. You know, that whole thing like beans, a musical fruit. that little saying. Well, there's something to it because beans inherently resist digestion, and they have to be processed or prepared in a way that makes them more accessible to digestion and less likely to cause gastric upset.
Right.
It's interesting that on the paleo diet, and it's a little bit of an arbitrary thing, is that they say no legumes whatsoever.
Yeah.
And some people, it makes a difference. And
it does. It actually does.
They also contain lectins, you know, lectins which have sometimes pro-inflammatory properties in certain individuals.
Right, right. And, you know, undercooked beans, particularly kidney beans, are known to be a little bit poisonous.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you want to make sure that you're cooking them thoroughly. But the soy yogurt, organic soy cultured yogurt, sounds delicious, Gabby. All right. And then there's also the controversy about, you know, if we could just talk a little bit about, is soy good or bad in terms of, for instance, breast cancer? Because of the weaker plant estrogens in soy, taking the place at the receptor, it keeps our own harmful estrogen from hooking up.
It may put super glue in the lock, so to speak.
Right.
To prevent our own harmful estrogen from activating the cancer.
Right.
And this is actually a principle that's used in medicine sometimes because they're what are called SERMs, selective estrogen receptor modulators.
Mm-hmm.
So among them are things like tamoxifen and there's another medication.
Rimidex?
That's a hormone blocker. There's also Rela, or something about it. The name escapes me, but it's a osteoporosis medication that it seems to enhance the estrogen receptors that govern bone while blocking the estrogen receptors that are in the breast.
Yeah.
So it makes it It makes it helpful against breast cancer while at the same time maintaining the beneficial effects of estrogen. That's the way the isoflavones in soy seem to work. Isoflavones are sometimes included in osteoporosis formulas.
Mm-hmm.
And that worries some women because they think it may enhance breast cancer.
But,
and I have to say there's some studies that say that it almost depends if you have, they may prevent breast cancer, But when you have active breast cancer, they may not be good.
Exactly. And it's important that we say so, because there is still the hypothesis that the plant estrogens are just adding to the estrogen burden in the body. Mm-hmm. So that might be something. That might be something. Well, Gabby.
Evista. Mm-hmm. Evista is the name of the vaccine.
Evista. Yeah. Oh, okay.
Raloxifene, right. Or Evista.
Okay.
I was going to say Reclast, but we just talked about Reclast.
Yeah.
Raloxifene, yeah. Or Evista. It's not a very powerful osteoporosis medication, but it confers some protection on the breasts.
Right. Interesting. Interesting. Gabby, thank you very, very much for your question. Okay.
We have time for one more question.
Okay. I've got an email from Myra. Dear Dr. Hoffman, I've been diagnosed with AFib after several years of having flutter. Cardiologist wants me on new blood thinners. I've learned about the risk of stroke and so forth. I live a very healthy lifestyle. I eat a great diet. I take lots of supplements, good health and vigor. I still work. I exercise. Is there a way to handle AFib without taking?
Well, that's a point. This is a question that has followed me from the beginning of my radio career. And, it's the question, you know, once you have atrial fibrillation, you are at higher risk of stroke, period.
Yeah.
And, you know, I used to listen to Dr. Atkins in the early days where I was just beginning radio, and he was like, a veteran
of
the radio.
Your health choices.
And you know, almost as like a professional interest, I would say, let's hear how he answers the questions. Uh-huh. And I remember him saying, oh, you know, you don't need to take these medications. You can take fish oil, and you can take, you know, this blood, natural blood thinner, and that natural blood thinner. And, you know, he would name some things, you know, like serapeptase and vasculzyme, you know, proteolytic enzymes and things like that, nattokinase and things like that. I have to say, though, that those things are less reliable mm-hmm. as blood thinners. And they do help, you know, garlic and fish oil, vitamin E. They do have somewhat of a blood thinning effect.
Mm-hmm.
But the risk is small of a very catastrophic event, a stroke.
Yeah.
And you don't want to run that risk, even though you have to take a medication like Coumadin, or now they are alternative medications to
Pradaxa.
Alternatives to Coumadin. Yeah, Pradaxa and so on. You got to bite the bullet because of a high risk of stroke. Now, one of the things I'd find interesting is that there are international variations on the standard of care mm-hmm. for atrial fibrillation. In England, where they have socialized medicine and they're interested in cost containment, they often just put patients with atrial fibrillation on aspirin.
Oh, enteric-coated 81 milligrams.
No,
something?
More the higher dose.
325.
The higher dose.
Okay.
Which is pretty good and a lot cheaper, and there's potentially less side effects.
Right.
However, aspirin has side effects. It can also cause bleeding ulcers.
That's true.
And
tinnitus.
Right, ringing in the ears. So I have to say, my current advice to patients is do all those healthy things, but you need to take medication. Now, so things that might help,
magnesium
taurate, fish oil. But guess
CoQ10,
what?
Yeah.
When you have atrial fibrillation, you can minimize it, but what if you get a little bit? How the problem is not so much with people who have continuous atrial fibrillation, it's with people who are in and out of atrial fibrillation. So you're almost, if we improve your atrial fibrillation, you're always in it, and you say, hooray, now I'm only in it like 50% of the time. It's still not going to reduce your risk of stroke, because it's like, when you switch gears from normal rhythm to atrial fibrillation, that's the danger time. It's like a car, you know, going from first gear into second gear. There's a moment where the rhythm changes.
Yeah.
And the heart chambers contract in a kind of chaotic way. And that creates a fluid dynamic where there's stasis of the blood. And when the blood stays in the heart chambers, even for an instant too long, it can form a clot.
Mm.
And then send that clot right up to your brain,
so
and you could
risk.
Have a devastating stroke.
Yeah.
So this is often, by the way, atrial fibrillation is often diagnosed after a stroke, not before a stroke. A person who is otherwise fine, this is what actually happened to a friend of a relative. She called me up and she said, oh, you know, so-and-so just had a stroke. what do you think? I said, well, she's like, she's not even 60 years old. She's like 55 years old. And she says, what do you think happened? I said, I think she had an arrhythmia.
Wow.
And sure enough, she had a Holter monitor which showed that she was in and out of atrial fibrillation. Unbeknownst to her, she didn't feel the palpitations.
Mm-hmm.
But now she's going to have to be on blood thinners.
Mm.
So.
And there it is. Okay. Wow. Myra, take your blood thinners.
Yes, unfortunately.
And continue your healthy lifestyle.
Right, which is going to, you know, look, by the way, atrial fibrillation in the population 75 and older is like acne in teenagers. It's pervasive. And those people don't die. They live on and on and
they
on.
They live on and on, right.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's like, I mean, very high percentage of people who live a long time have an arrhythmia, mm-hmm. and you can live with an arrhythmia.
Mm-hmm. That's encouraging.
Yeah.
Thank you, Myra. Thank you for your question.
And, you know, it sort of speaks to the issue of, like, is health, which the theme I continually return to, is health completely a merit system? And no, the answer is, if it were, nobody would die.
Right.
Follow my advice. Don't die. Frankly, you know, we may fend off health problems and deftly survive and ingeniously work around them,
mm-hmm.
but health problems will arise because simply the body's machinery ages. We haven't yet completely reversed that.
Yeah. And there you have it, ladies and gentlemen.
The final thought. All right, so thanks very much for joining us. And remember that these podcasts are free. We enjoy delivering them to you, but there are production costs associated with them. And one way of defraying those costs is for you to shop at the Hoffman Center Dispensary, which is available to you via drhoffman.com, or you can go to hoffmancenter.com and look for outstanding supplements, such as many of the supplements we mention here on this program, and you can assure yourself high-quality nutrients at the very same time that you assure yourself a steady stream of helpful information that is free of charge to you. We love delivering that message. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Until next time.